This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is wonderful to have you listening. Thank you for joining us for yet another marvellous, marvellous episode of our alcohol-free podcast. Dead excited to introduce you to today's guest because I follow him on social media, as do thousands of others. He's wonderful. Hold that thought. Just hold that thought for a second. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz or Shazza. I've just hit 3 years alcohol free and it is breathtaking. It's breathtaking for many reasons. Didn't think I'd do 3 days, to be honest. Didn't think I'd get through the first weekend. Stuck with it, powered through, immersed myself in all things alcohol free, and here I am with an alcohol free community, with my alcohol free friends, singing from the rooftops about bloody sobriety. It is life changing. I used to be a daily drinker, ramped it up at weekends, you know the score, changed everything. And it gives me great pleasure to be chatting to you today as co-host of Over the Influence. I do not do this on my own. I am joined by my very glamorous podcast co-host. He's in the future. He's in New Zealand. Sorry, he's in the future in New Zealand. Hello, Freddie Love.
Good day to you, everybody. I am Freddie. I'm here in the future in New Zealand. I come from a long and hardened background of heavy drinking, heavy partying, heavy use of all sorts of enlivening substances to not make my life very good at all. But almost 1,000 days ago, I told myself that I was tired of living a life of anxiety, hangovers, regret, depression, and I decided to live a life less ordinary, change my job, change my career, change my outlook, change my mindset, change my fitness, and change my country. And I'm here in New Zealand, so excited to speak to you all today. I am in awe of our guest, and I know it's going to be a fantastic episode.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Of course, we've got producer Ben. He used to be called Background Ben. No longer, because he just stopped. He stopped with the beers. It's a joyous tale. He joined us as a beer swilling, if you don't mind me saying that.
That's a beer swilling
podcast producer. He spent that much time in mine and Freddie's company listening to our alcohol-free rantings. He made a small change. And where are you now, Ben?
I am now 14 months alcohol-free, which I'm delighted with. I've actually got a new nickname with my friends and family. They call me Zen Ben now.
Oh, I love
because
it.
I'm calmer, I'm more present, I'm just generally nicer to be around. I was never a huge drinker. My problem was I didn't have an off switch. I was a classic binge drinker. So I'd drink twice as fast as everybody else, twice as much as everyone else when I was on it. And to be honest, it was harming my life. And I like to say that I don't think anything particularly bad would have happened if I carried on drinking, but I don't think anything particularly good would have happened either. It has been the best thing to go from what Andy Ramage calls a middle lane drinker, so what lots of people call grey area drinkers, to somebody who doesn't drink now, because my relationship's better. My work life is better. I'm happier. I like myself more. And everyone else likes me more, which is great. So yeah, that's me. Let's stop talking about us because we're all a little giddy because we all absolutely love our guest today. And we know that a lot of the community members who are watching love our guest today. So shall we meet him?
Let's meet our guest. Ben, thank you. Zen Ben. Yeah, really, really excited to welcome today's guest to the podcast. He's called David Wilson, but thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people know him simply as Sober Dave. He's one of the loveliest men on social media, and it just gives me and us great pleasure to welcome Sober Dave to the pod. How are you diddling, Sober Dave?
Well, what a entrance, do you know what I mean? I feel a bit shy about all that. And I realise how professional your podcast as well, because I do my own podcast and I just say, right, let's crack on with it. Really, really good. So thank you for inviting me on tonight, today, this morning.
Tomorrow for Freddie. Who cares? We've managed to do it after a bit of juggling. Dave, it's our absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Obviously, within the sober community, you are really well known. A lot of people that listen to our pod, we know, follow you. Our community members just sing about Sober Dave all the time. If somebody's listening to this for the first time and maybe doesn't know too much about you, would you just introduce yourself to us and let us know a bit about who you are and what you do in the style of a blind date introduction?
Yeah, well, my name's Dave, as you say, David Wilson, and I'm 57 now, and I come from an era where you would go to school with a hangover. You know, we would start drinking at 13, 14 years old, up the shops, you know, getting adults to buy the beer from the off licence and whatever, and having a packet of Rothmans, and going home, the room would be spinning around and you'd be sick everywhere, and then you'd just get up and go to school. But I was quite sporty, actually, and I play a lot of football, rugby and that. And so going into my teens, it was work hard, play hard sort of thing, you know. But it was never really in the week. It was more at the weekends, going clubbing. I was a bit of a lad with the ladies and whatever, you know, and getting drunk at the weekends. So I imagine, like, in my early 20s, it wasn't really that bad because I was really keen on my fitness. But creeping into my 20s, late 20s, it sort of ramped up a little bit. And the holidays were, in those days, were the 1830s holidays.
Yeah.
And I remember I was picked as Tarzan on the coach, and they picked a Jane. And when we got there, we were drinking on the coach, and we had to run into the sea, run around his pole 10 times, come back, pick Jane up. They'd pour booze down your neck, go back out, run around, whatever. And I remember throwing up all over the beach, and then they'd pour more in. Real, like, incredibly huge amounts of alcohol in one afternoon. Do you know what I mean? But when you're that age, you love it, don't you? It's like, yeah. And then you go back, get changed, go out till 5 in the morning. And it was like my thing was drinking. I was never really into drugs or anything like that. You know, I might have an odd spliff and that. But then leading into my 30s, I started going to a local pub, and I soon developed my name of Glugs, because I would drink really quickly. So if I went in after work, I could drink 6-7 pints in an hour. Like, I just used to throw them down. And then through sort of relationship breaks up, you know, I spent a lot of time womanizing, and I lived on my own then. And I wasn't accountable to anyone, you know, so my drinking, like, was ridiculous. So I'll go into a pub opening hours on a Sunday, midday, and still be in there when they're ringing the bell at night. But then I'll go home and drink more. It just got worse and worse. And I don't want to peak too early, but as I got through my 30s, it just got worse. You know, like, I loved it. I loved being drunk. I loved that feeling of just relief, you know. Like, I was a massive overthinker. I ran my own business, so I was functioning, and it was just become part of my life so easily. I just fitted in with drinking, you know. It was just glugsy, going in the pub, hello, son, have a beer. No, well, I'm only having one. And I'd end up leaving the car there and being all night, you know. And it just got worse and worse, which I don't want to peak too early, but we can talk about it after, of how my 40s and 50s went, because it, I don't know how I'm here, basically.
I think, I mean, it is, Dave, and where to start. And it was funny with when you mentioned the 18 to 30s holidays, I guess for any of our international listeners, they were a big UK thing, weren't they? Like the holidays, yeah, to places like Spain, you know, specifically for people who are aged 18 to 30. A lot of people don't talk about, you know, why we choose to drink, why we decide to drink. But I feel very much the same as you. I'd love to give a kind of, you know, deep psychological reason about my childhood or, you know, my upbringing or something else. The truth was, I loved it. I bloody loved it. I loved the buzz. I loved the energy. I loved that I can make people laugh. There was that magic moment in the night or the day when the world seemed brilliant and it all seemed shiny and sparkly and everything was possible. But then there'd be the down point after that where things would be feeling the opposite. But to mention that, you know, you said that you love drinking, and do you feel that it would have always been this way for you? Was there any particular trigger, or did you just realise early on that, you know, I'm good at this and I enjoy it, and then you just cracked on?
Now I'm sober, I realise what caused it. My mum left when I was 14. And she left a letter on the table, and I was getting ready for school and I saw this letter and I opened it up and it was from my mum saying, sorry, Dave, but I'm leaving your dad. I can't tell you the reasons why. And I didn't see it for a year, but I was incredibly insecure. And then just after that, my dad met someone else quite quickly. And there was an incident at home where she made me feel really unwelcome pretty quickly. And I looked to my dad for support and he just turned his back because he didn't know what to say. And I remember literally bawling my eyes out, walking up the road, because I felt completely rejected by my mum and my dad. And then it wasn't long after that that I got in with some Herberts at school. Hence, that led me on to being accepted, you know, external validation by other people saying, oh, you're a lad, you're all right, because I felt rejected. And that's how it started, you know. But equally, I loved it as well. I absolutely love getting drunk. And I would today. I mean, if I didn't know what it meant now, me drinking and whatever, it's important for me to say that, because there's not many people in the community that own up to that. But if there was no harm involved, if it didn't affect other people, if it didn't affect children or whatever, it would be something that I would have as my full-time pastime. But of course, we know different from that. And it affected my mental health in unbelievably, but also my now wife, she's had cancer 3 times, and that affected our relationship through that as well, because I just wasn't present. You know, the third time I was, second time I was drinking, and you know, I would pass out on the sofa when she really needed me at night to put my arm around her and ask her how she was feeling and comfort her. And it makes me feel ill thinking that she would go to bed knowing that I was getting drunk downstairs and she was dealing with it all on her own, you know. So for me, alcohol become even more toxic than the substance it actually is. It was toxic in every part of my life, how it affected our children, my mental health. My health was shocking. It was I was 20 stone and my blood pressure was like heart attack material. You know, doctor said to me, we got to get you urgently on medication because you could drop down dead. And I still carried on, you know. So it took me a long time to come to the conclusion that the thing that I absolutely loved, I had to stop. So it's like, for me, alcohol is like being in a relationship with a mistress. you know, and you know you shouldn't be doing it, but they've got this pull on you all the time and they're calling you all the time, come and get me, come and get me. And I had to divorce the mistress, you know, and it took a lot of courage, willpower and support around me, really.
Dave, can I just come back to something you said a short time ago? This thing you absolutely loved, alcohol that you absolutely loved. You said that it affected your mental health unbelievably. Mm. How bad did it get for you, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, there was one time, so what I used to do, I mean, it ramped up. I've missed out my 40s, which to anyone listening now, I was drinking a litre of vodka a night.
Whoa.
On my own at home, putting Pink Floyd on, putting my headphones on, woe is me, listed crying, literally. So that glass there, right, would be neat vodka and I would just neck it and I would do
a litre of vodka a night?
Yeah. And at weekends, I would be drinking from lunchtime, Stella's, and then get stuck into the vodka after that. And 9 times out of 10, do the bottle. And I did that for years. That's why I said at the beginning, it's lucky I'm here. But one night, I was really drunk and I was really down, depressed. And I went home where I am now. And I thought, I'm better off not being here. But it was, I'm better off to stop everyone else having to deal with me as well. And I looked everywhere for some tablets, literally everywhere. And I ended up face down on the floor the next morning. I woke up and I kind of remembered, you know, like in the back of my mind. And the thing is, I would have taken them. I would have definitely taken them at that time. But I didn't care. But when I woke up in the morning, I really did care. And that's what really scared me, the thought that I could have committed suicide because I was so drunk that I was totally irrational about everything. And that was a really scary part of the journey leading up to me giving up, because I thought my wife would be absolutely devastated. My son would be mortified. And then it would be, how selfish and whatever. And it was just a moment of madness that I was completely blotto and thinking everyone would be better off without me. But equally, I felt that as well at times when I was drinking, because I didn't know how to stop. You know, when I was drinking that amount of alcohol, I thought there's no way I can ever stop this, because I'll either withdraw to an extent, I'll have a seizure, or I will just end up killing myself through the amount I'm having. And I didn't care about that either. I had this fantasy that, I don't know if anyone knows A Beautiful South, but there's a video, Old Red Eyes is back, and there's a line, every landlord around the district to be like mortified because they're the only people that cared about him. And I sort of imagine this whole thing of the local pubs, oh no, Glugs is dead, what are we going to do? You know, this weird stuff going on in my head. And it was nothing to do about what I had in my life. I didn't appreciate anything because all I was thinking about was the next drink, you know. It was a horrible place to be.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about, and I promise, by the way, we're going to lift things up in a second, because I think your story is so inspirational. But you talk a lot on social media, and you mentioned it as well, about that shift from, so, you know, going out with your mates, partying on the holidays and everything, to solitary drinking. And I know I recognise that in myself, where I'd be going out and partying, and then it would sort of shift to going to the pub on my own to watch the football.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't actually watch the football. And then it would shift to, why bother going to the pub when I could just be drinking on my own at home? And it's only that shift that you recognise when you look back sometimes. But I know a lot of people out there, with lockdown and everything else that's been happening over the last 18 months, there's been a lot of solitary drinking going on. Yeah. And do you find that do you think that makes it harder for people? Did that make it harder for yourself if you're trying to change your behaviours, but you're just there drinking on your own all the time with your own thoughts?
It's a different kind of drinking, isn't it? Because when you're going out, you're kind of socialising. But what happened to me was it didn't become social because I couldn't drink enough when I went out. So I was one of those people that would be buying in-betweeners, we call them, because I would drink a pint really quickly and the other guys would be like that much down in the pint. So I'd say, I'm just going to get an in-betweener. And then I might go around and have a bar and get a double vodka and tonic or something and down that on the way to the top because I just couldn't do it. And in the end, I thought, do you know what? This doesn't suit me. And I moved and it was too far to the pub. And I was never one that would drink and drive to the pub, which is ironic because I probably was drink driving every morning of my life. You know, I would get in the car or the van after a litre of vodka. You can't tell me that I wouldn't be thrown in prison. But the solitary drinking is what really started the real downfall for me because I spent so much time. I would go to the supermarket on a Friday lunchtime, I'd finish work early every Friday, get a big trolley, fill it up with Stella's, boxes of wine, vodka, tonic, a chicken, just to eat something.
It's good to have balance, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Just need a chicken.
Yeah, just cook the chicken and nibble on it throughout the weekend. And then come out the door Monday morning, literally looking like hell. Do you know what I mean? And then promising myself that I wouldn't drink that night or that week. But we all know what goes on there. By lunchtime, you start to feel a bit better. By 2 o'clock, you're going, oh, I could have one tonight. Just, you know, I've had a bad day. I've had a good day, actually. I've had a nothing day. You know, so my solitary drinking was where I started to become deceitful around myself, really, because I wasn't really monitoring what I was having in Freeport. So like all the people in lockdown, I can really understand how that happens because their Zoom meetings finish at 2. I mean, I've talked to a couple of clients that they are doing this, right? There's a double vodka in there, but it looks like tea, right? You know, it is a real downward spiral to do that. And if I could have changed anything really in the beginning was to not drink at home because I'm sure that pretty much changed everything for me, you know, in a lot of ways. I did a podcast with, I did a live with someone. I won't say who it is. She's a TV presenter. And she said to me, she feels like her drinking's normal. And I said, well, what's normal then? And she said, well, I only have a couple of glasses of wine every night with dinner. And I said, well, that's at least double your units per week for a start. Plus the kids think that it's normal to unwind with wine and nothing else, you know. And it's, for me, my solitary drinking was to escape. So I literally had this thing, this routine I would do. So I picked that up, right, and I'd go, see you later, reality. Every time I picked up the first drink, goodbye, reality, see you later, you know? And for me, solitary drinking was never one to unwind, never one to relax. It was always to get blotto. You know, a litre of vodka a night is going to do that, isn't it?
So many people within our community and people listening to this now will want to know how the hell you change that because you are obviously proof indeed, Dave, that you can come back from such serious levels of drinking. Before we get onto that, I just want to talk a bit more about solitary drinking and the person you just referred to there that said, oh, it's just a couple of glasses of wine a night. That's how it started for me way back. You know, I'm 47 years old now, a couple of glasses of wine in my 30s, a little bit more, late 30s. But it's so insipid and it's so, what's the word? It just creeps up behind you and bites you on the arse. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, your normal at home is a bottle of wine. But obviously a bottle of wine's never quite enough because the more you drink, the more your brain wants you to drink a little bit more. And you think, well, I can't open a second bottle on a school night, so I might just have a vodka. And obviously, Dave, as you say, when you're doing it at home, it's not a single vodka. It's probably a quadruple.
Yeah.
And it's just that cycle and it keeps building and building and building it. And it's so normalised, isn't it? And until, I can only speak for myself, until I stopped and made a decision to take a break, I look back now and I think, shit, where did that come from? And it just creeps up and creeps up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's accumulation. And the slippery slope as well from that second bottle. It's when you drink the first one and you go, do you know what? It's not quite enough. I'm going to have another one at the second one and leave it. And before you know it, you're going to end up drinking that bottle. So if I wasn't drinking vodka, so when I met my wife, she didn't really know. I hid it that well, which is crazy how I got away with it. But you come the master of disguise, don't you, with a lot of it. You come up with so many excuses and reasons. Like she would tell, should we talk tonight at 9 o'clock when the kids were in bed, when I wasn't living here? Oh, no, I've got a friend popping in, so I'll chat to you in the morning, but I text you because I didn't want to talk to her at nine because I'd be blotto, you know? But when I moved in, I obviously couldn't drink a litre of vodka a night, so I started bringing wine into the house and hiding wine. And I would drink 3 bottles of wine. There was one time on a Sunday summer afternoon, it was beautiful outside, and I said I'd make the dinner, which is another excuse because it's a free rein to drink. And she took the kids over to the park and I'd hidden a box of wine down the side of the fridge and put a load of carrier bags on it. But I'd also got a bottle as well. So I poured a glass of wine so she knew I was going to have a drink. But I thought, oh my God, she's going to be back any minute now. I'll top up another one. So I was topping up the bottle from the side of the fridge, the box. Before I knew it, I drunk the box, right?
Oh, my God.
I was caning it, literally caning. And I dropped the glass on the floor. When they come back, the image was me on the floor, scraping all the glass up with my hands, cut all my hands, and my eyes were all over the place because I was absolutely sozzled. And that was in 2 hours. They'd gone to the park and come back about 4 o'clock, and she thought dinner would be ready and I'd be sober, and I was paralytic. And I think that's when she had enough of it then. But I AWOLed for about 4 days. We had a row over the PS4 remote or something, and I threw it at the wall, drove off to Eastbourne, and I spent 4 days homeless, basically. And I was in the Witherspoons in Eastbourne for 4 days, and that still wasn't enough. Because I said to her, yeah, I've got to give up. I'm going to kill myself. And I still carried on drinking for another 7 months. So I would like to say that's my rock bottom, but there's been so many, you know. And there was one day that she came where I am now, actually. I was doing, believe it or not, a course in training to be a counsellor. And I was failing my homework because I was just getting drunk doing my homework and thinking this 1,500 word thing is amazing. I'm just going to send it. And I send it off and I go into college that week and I go, what the hell is this? You know, but in my head, it was fantastic, you know. And then she come in and she just said to me, I can't do this anymore. And that was just before Christmas in 2018. And it was in January 2019 that a friend down the road just texted me one day randomly. He's like a psychic. He would tell you things and you would go, how the hell does he know that? You know? And he texted me, how do you feel like giving up drinking with me for 3 months to see where you are in your health, your relationships and well-being, whatever? And I looked at it and I laughed. I went, I can't give up 3 days, let alone 3 months. But it trickled in throughout the day. And it was weird. It was like a spiritual, like, it was just a weird experience throughout the day. And I started questioning myself then. And it was like, where would I be? How would I look? How would my mental health be? How would my marriage be? And then I stopped the van and I texted him. I said, are you in? And he said, yeah. I said, right, I'm coming to see you. And I walked in and he shook my hand. I said, that's it. I didn't have any rehab. I just stopped, right? Which is, how did I do that when I was drinking the amount I was? How did I not have a seizure? How did I not collapse? But I didn't. I just did it. And that where you were saying, Freddie, you're nearly 1,000 days, right? Mm. I'm 1,000 days on Sunday.
Amazing.
So by the time this is out, this will be the day after. You'll be on 1,001 days when this podcast comes out, Dave. Brilliant.
Woo! 1,001 days.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
We're Sound Rebel, and we just wanted to let you know a bit more about us.
Sound Rebel produced this podcast, and we work with all sorts of personalities to help them engage with their current audiences.
We work with actors, football commentators, comedians, personal trainers, radio presenters, influencers, and even world record holders.
So, if you've got an audience but don't have a podcast, get in touch with us.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad, and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and take your place in the fastest growing broadcast medium in the world.
Right, back to the episode.
Dave, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of people now who know that I'm alcohol free approach me, usually with a beer in their hand, and ask me how bad my problem was. But they ask me that because they want to judge where they are. They want to know how bad their problem is. I think for me, I realised that the problem with alcohol for me was coming. It's when it stopped being fun. Throughout my 20s, it was something that enhanced the experience. In my 30s, I got a bigger job that I probably wasn't ready for, and I started turning to alcohol because I was stressed. And yes, some of that was on my own, but some of that was with other people as well. You can still have a problem.
It doesn't discriminate, does it? Alcohol doesn't discriminate anyone, right? So it could be one glass every now and again, and it could be a problem. You know, it can affect your sleep. It can affect how you're present with your kids at bedtime. You know, it can affect a million things. You don't have to drink immense amounts of alcohol for it to be a problem. I think that's what you're saying. And if it is a problem, and then do something about it, you know, like, and there's a lot of women that work with me now that are grey area drinkers. You know, so they don't drink every single day. They don't binge drink, but they can't give it up. So that's a problem because my wife's one of them. So I say to her, look, you've had cancer 3 times. Should you really be drinking? Well, I'm not stopping. But she's one of these lucky people that can have one glass and then a cup of tea, which I've...
Is that a thing? Can people do that?
It's like,
doesn't help you, does it?
You know, like, what is that all about? But she would never give up. And it's like, because she doesn't want to, you know. But there are times it affects her, you know, and I know that. And I know it affects her parenting, the relationship with the kids. She gets irritable. She's not present with me, I can tell, you know. So it doesn't have to be a catastrophe for it to be a problem. It can be, little drinking can be a problem, you know? And it's people being honest with themselves and thinking, do you know what? What are my options if I stop this now? You know, and that's where I help people look at their relationship with alcohol and reframe it in a different way that partly it could be habit, you know? Like, it could be friends encouraging you. Oh, come on, love, I'll come round and we wine o'clock and we can open a bottle of wine and that. And then people feel intimidated that they don't want to say, well, actually, I'm not drinking anymore. I'm not, you know. So I help people get over that because it's all about finding your own lane with it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and with people that come to me and say, well, I don't give a shit, to be honest. I never have done. It was a problem in my life and I don't care what anyone thinks and that's how I roll. But I do know that some people do. So there are ways you can say, you know, I'm just having a health kick. I'm just want to lose a bit of weight or whatever it works for them, really. Do you know what I mean? There's no set rules about it. But I always say alcohol doesn't discriminate anyone. It's a highly addictive drug and it's pretty shit, to be honest.
Going back to what Ben was saying before about people questioning you about how much did you used to drink and how bad did it get at home? Bad enough for me. It's irrelevant
what
I drank.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
It's in fact, our guest Sarah Connolly a couple of weeks ago talked very much about what you're talking about here, Dave, about She doesn't say how much she drank. She just said it was too much for me. And if that's at home or if that's in the pub or that's out with your mates, it doesn't matter. It's nobody's frigging business.
Yeah.
Which really, it really gets my goat.
Yeah.
And I'm very much of your thinking that, sod off, it's my business. It doesn't matter what I drink. It was enough, too much for me is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And I always say, I answer that question when people say, well, how much did you drink? Because as Ben said, they're trying to gauge their consumption.
It's the way to say stuff. It's
it is. Mirror. But too much, too fast, too often. That's my answer.
Yeah. Or I turn into an absolute psycho when I'm drunk. So I'm going to answer many questions. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. And there's the stigma, you know. That's what Sarah Drage and me talk about, the stigma of it all, you know, of who are you to judge. And, you know, when they say, oh, you're boring, I say, well, what, you're not? When you've had four pints and you're spitting all over me telling the same joke.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've got so much that I want to ask. I suppose you're 57 years old. You've got the sober glow, if you don't mind me saying. A bit of
you're
a silver
cool
fox going on there.
Year old, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man,
I've just had an hour and a half PT session before I come in here, actually.
Wow.
I was literally crawling into the office.
You look amazing. And in some ways, when I first started following you on social media, I just thought he's just a bloody lovely bloke. And I know, like I said, a lot of our listeners love what you do and just the honest way you do it. And don't take this the wrong way, and it's not meant to sound like an insult. You celebrate 1,000 days. Well, it's 1,001 days when this episode is released. From the way you speak and you coach others and the advice you give, I thought you'd been doing this about 10 years.
So did I.
Not 1,000 days.
No, I know. And it's just because I'm one of these people that I like to learn about things. So I really educate myself around, because I don't want to put anything out on social media that I don't know what I'm talking about. And trying to support people in the right way, I think, you know. And I'm grateful for every single day. I'm grateful to meet, and I don't want to sound like this is a bloody Oscar speech, but I'm grateful to meet people like yourselves in the community. I do a lot of public speaking now. I'm doing this school thing in front of about 500 16 to 19 year olds soon, which should be challenging, to say the
Amazing.
Least. I'll be having cabbages thrown at me. Get off. And with Sarah Drage, we're hoping to do this documentary. I'm starting my third season of my podcast, which I've got some incredible guests on, starting with Catherine Gray.
Amazing.
Yeah. She and we had a right laugh on the podcast, actually. She's got a new book out, actually. I've got it here. And this
is
book,
Warm Sober Sunshine or something.
Yeah,
that
one.
That's
such,
the one, Sober Warm.
It's such a brilliant book.
Sunshine Warm Sober.
I just got all really excited then because I adore Catherine Gray.
Yeah.
The right word, it's
lovely,
words,
actually.
Wrong order.
Yeah, that's me in a nutshell, Ben.
So I've got my podcast and there's something else in the pipeline that I can't really say at the moment. But
oh, come on, Dave. Give us a snippet.
Well, we won't tell anyone, Dave.
Don't tell anyone, but I'm, you know... Anyone, it's just between us lot, but there could be a book on the way at some point.
Amazing.
So
I now actually need to check. Am I allowed to put that in the final edit, Dave, or not?
Go on.
Just between us. Amazing, Dave.
Dave, can I ask? Obviously, you're aging backwards, which is fantastic.
Yeah, Benjamin Button, right?
Too right. You've got all these fantastic, exciting projects on the go and coming up. Can you identify one main thing as a kind of character trait, or so not a project, not something physical, but something within you, that the one thing that you're really happy has changed since you gave up alcohol? The reason I ask is because being over a year into this now, I look back and I didn't notice at the start, but for me, I am more consistent than I ever have been in everything. If I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And I do it to the best of my ability because I'm not hungover, I haven't got alcohol in my system, I'm awake, I'm present, blah, 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 all the other things that come with giving up booze. have you got one thing that you can identify, or are there just too many benefits to choose one?
That's a great question, actually, that I've never been asked before. But my answer to that, I think, is that my rationale is a lot better. You know, I would make snap decisions. I would do stupid things, make silly decisions when I was drinking, you know, but I'm a lot more rational. I'm a lot quieter than I thought I was. I've been quite happy. I went on a retreat when I gave up drinking for 4 days, and there was 18 hour silence, and I loved it. So I spend a lot of time.
It wouldn't last 18 minutes, Dave.
I absolutely loved it. And there's retreats now, you can have 7 days without saying anything as well. So,
what?
Yeah. But and I'm a lot more peaceful in myself. I'm a lot more relaxed in my own skin. I've got my self-respect back, you know, which I haven't had ever, I don't think. But I do actually respect myself and like myself now. And I can say that without it sounding conceited or anything, because I know that I'm a good person, and I do live a good life, and I'm loyal, generous in what I give out and whatever. And I just, I'm quite, I suppose in a nutshell, I'm happy in my own skin now for the first time in my life, you know. And I think about the quality of my life I have ahead as well, you know. Hopefully I'm going to live another 30 years. But I had no vision before of my future. It's all very much in the moment of, I need a drink, I need to get drunk tonight, you know. So I would never plan anything ahead, really, because I was just stuck on this hamster wheel continuously of drinking and feeling crap in the morning, and then in the afternoon feeling like I'll just have one, and just went on and on and on.
Do you think you were drinking because you were unhappy with life, or were you unhappy with life because you were drinking?
Ooh. I think both. I honestly think both. I just think that was my go-to for a lot of things. I got myself in a real muddle with it, and I didn't have any other coping mechanisms. Plus, I lived on my own as well for 10 years, and I wasn't accountable to no one. So I could do it and get away with it, and I loved it. And I'm not denying that. I loved it. And even the miserable times when I put on a Pink Floyd track and play it like with my headphones on, there was some sort of sadistic point of that I loved that as well. Otherwise, I would have done something about it, you know. And it's a weird. But my big regret, you know, is that I can't get that back. But it's about what I can do now and what my future is. And I, you know, it's accepting that. And so many people say to me, oh, but I've pissed away my 40s or my 30s. Well, you wouldn't be where you are now without that, and you weren't ready then, you know. So you've got to accept it, and it's grieving is part of it. You've got to grieve the process, because I always say it's like ending a relationship with someone. You know, my ex-wife, I miss her sometimes. Yeah, it was a nightmare, but there's times I think, do you know what? We had some great times, you know. But that's the fantasy, because in reality, it's not like that. But yeah, it was both, Freddie, to be honest. It's a good question. Yeah,
but I totally agree, David. I think it's so easy sometimes, especially, I mean, I'm honest about it, even though I'm not drinking now, my mental health still takes a dip sometimes. And it's very easy to get caught in that trap of, oh, I wasted all those years and all that money and all those stupid things and the hangovers and the regret. But then I think maybe it had to happen. Maybe all those hangovers, all those regrets, all those stupid things that we did, maybe they had to happen, because if they didn't happen, then we wouldn't be right here, right now, on the world's number one alcohol-free podcast, probably.
What?
I've been talking to yourself, Dave, and having having yourself inspiring so many people. Obviously, we're number two, Dave. You're number one. But is that thing? I think, you know, these things have. We have to go through those tough times to enable us to be here right now, like the phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yeah,
and this is what we have to go through. I've said it many times before. It's like a superhero movie. No one watches a superhero movie where the superhero's so bloody perfect and doesn't go through life with any trials or any tribulations. That's a shitty story. The real stories that we all relate to are the hard times and coming through it and then going on and changing the bloody world, which is what you're doing, sir. And that's why I am such a fan of all the things that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, mate. That's lovely. And I would add that it's always you need to stay humble as well, because there's certain people I know and they got too big and they forget where they come from. You know, and it's I'm going, I think, tomorrow night to visit a rehab centre that's opening in London, because I want to see what the facilities are like and I want to meet some people that are in rehab and stuff just to keep grounded. You know, I think it's really, really important, because we can do all this work, but we've got to continue to remember that we've all been there before and we know what it feels like, and never lose sight of that as well.
Dave, I think you're fabulous. Our community members also are big fans. They are watching this. And hello to Ali. She says, I've just found Dave's podcast. She says, I'm hooked. It's amazing. Dave seems to make the guests feel very comfortable, comfortable enough to share very personal and amazing stories, which is just lovely. And a quick question here, Dave, from Susan. She says, if there's time for a question, I love this question. So, you know, when you told us earlier that your mate rang you and he said, come on then, try 3 months alcohol free. When did that change to forever?
Good question, Susan. That was pretty much 2-3 weeks in. And I was walking my little chihuahua called Lola. And I saw the local pub right over in the corner. And I thought, this 3 months is going to be really difficult. But what am I going to do at the end of the 3 months? And you know, like people when they do dry January or what's coming up this week, Stoptober, normally at the end of it, they get absolutely obliterated, don't they? Because they think, oh, I've had 30 days off. I've earned it. And I thought, well, if I give up 3 months, my wife will see a different side to me. I will feel better. My sleep will be better. I look healthier. I will be healthier. Then I will completely blow it at the end of it by going back exactly how I was before. So I then committed to 500 days and I raised money for Alcohol Change UK. And I did, I can't remember what I did, something, because I've done 2 charity things for them. No, that was it. I did 600 miles on my Peloton in 30 days.
Oh.
And I raised £2,800 or something for Alcohol Change. But anyway, so I went to 500 days, and then after about a month, I just announced it to the world that that's it. So in a way, the 3 months was good enough for me to set that sort of boundary for me, but it wasn't long really before I realised actually it could be 3 months, 6 months. So if I went back to where it was before, it would be, what's the point in doing it? No point.
So many people ask us, we're all at different stages, you know, of our alcohol-free journeys. When does the magic start? When does it start to change? And we all sort of say 90 to 100 days is when it's got the potential to become life-changing. And yes, there are dips and troughs, aren't there? It's not all bloody sweetness and light, far from it. But if you can just push through, you know, particularly if people are starting sober October now, like you were saying, Dave, get through that month. Maybe try November as well. And if you're doing well, crack on with December.
Yeah.
You will reach that point where you could actually change it all with a lot of hard work, because it isn't easy.
Some people don't like the thought of 100 days. It's too much for them. But I always encourage people to do 30, because that eliminates the I'm not drinking in the week. Because what happens with that quite often is that you go Monday and Tuesday because you're hanging from the weekend anyway, and you've overdone it anyway because you're not drinking in the week. Wednesday, you start to find excuses and you're like, oh, I've got a friend going for a drink off. Well, I haven't drunk Monday and Tuesday, so I could have one. And then you drink Wednesday. Thursday comes, you think, well, I drank last night, might as well start again next week. And it never works. So if you give yourself 30 days, it gives you a chance to sort your sleep out a little bit, eat well, look fresher, and it gives you those days behind you. And then you can think, do you know what, I'm going to carry on. And when I did my Dry Jan Sober Dave group, there were 450 people doing dry jam with me, and I would probably say 30% are still not drinking out of that lot.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And all I did there was I did a live every night on my Instagram and created some chat rooms on my Instagram, and that's it. That's all I did. But that's quite a high thing. Then I did a sober mate group. So it's reaching out for your community as well, you know, finding your people.
Yeah,
things 100%. Like this podcast, Facebook groups. I do events as well now. I've got one at Christmas, and I just love them because do you know what? Funny thing that everyone loves to hear this actually is my last event was in a place in Dalston, and it's well known for being a bit of a druggy sort of den, but it's obviously at Saturday afternoon, and the woman was going around with this air freshener because it reeked of ganja, right? And we've all gone in there, and there's about 60 of us. And the woman said, I've never seen so many fresh faces in all my life. And that's the difference, isn't it?
Sober Dave, David Wilson, it has been an absolute joy to connect with you. And you know when you meet somebody famous or you see them on telly and then you bump into them into the street and you feel like you've known them for years and years? Not that I bump into many famous people in the street. I feel like that's...
Well, hang on, Shaz. You know, in your job as BBC Radio Lancashire, before we started recording, you were telling me that you interviewed Matt Goss recently.
Ah!
So you're
talking
Goss,
to famous people
from,
all the time.
Rick Astley a couple of weekends ago, but I don't like to talk about it too much. Those guys are nothing on Sober Dave. Yeah. Let me tell you. It's been a joy, Dave. Thank you so much. We've really enjoyed it. Myself, Freddie and Ben, our community members on this Zoom call as well, this recording, have thoroughly loved it. You are a thoroughly, thoroughly lovely bloody bloke. Dead inspiring.
You.
You've got
thank
so
you.
Much to share. Obviously, you do coaching and you share a lot on Instagram. Just remind people, Dave, where they can find more information about you and your story and what you do.
Well, just basically on my Instagram. I've got my link tree there. I've got everything on there, my website, and there's a podcast. What is it? Leanne, what's my podcast? One for the Road.
One for the Road. It's a cracker.
One for the Road. And Series 3 is coming out in 2 weeks, and I've got some fantastic guests coming on there. Real inspirations in the sober community, you know, and I love that because it's just like your podcast, we're just having a chat, no agenda. I never write any notes down or anything. I just say hello, like we're having a cup of tea, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's the best way. So I've really enjoyed this podcast. So thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been a real lovely hour or so. So thank you,
Dave. Thank you so much. It's been a joy. Thank you.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Men Lose Weight.
This is Men Lose Weight, a podcast about four blokes who partied hard through their 20s together, and now they think maybe we should try and lose a bit of weight in their 30s together.
Be honest now, lads. Have you ever been in the middle of a personal training session and feigned an injury?
Guys, so I moved from Birmingham to Nottingham 2 years ago, right? Turns out I've been paying for a gym for 2 years that I live over 100 miles away from.
I guarantee at one point or another, he said, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels.
He obviously didn't try that pizza. Did you try that pizza that came out this year? The one good thing about 2020 where it's like KFC and pizza combined.
I have lost £3 this week.
Just so you know the numbers, I've also lost £3 this week.
Whoa!
I'm down to 17 stone 4.
I have also lost £3 this week.
What? You are joking me.
I am £1 down this week.
It's all
well
good.
Done, mate.
We've all lost, progress. Which is magnificent, which is definitely better than last week, boys. Well done.
A lot better than last week.
£10 in a week, boys.
Well, that's like a bait. That's more than my baby weighed when he was born, so we've lost that collectively in a week. So, I mean, if you want to look at that, that's pretty decent, isn't it?
Men Lose Weight.
from Sound Rebel. Listen now on your chosen podcast app.